Chapter 29. Exile. Now, October. I leave the office early and wait anxiously for Dan to get to the apartment. I didn't tell him I'd be here early. I just packed up my things for the weekend and came home. Home. Ha, this isn't home. It's a showroom. The concrete walls echo with my impatient footsteps. I always feel cold here, no matter how high I turn the heat. Was I seduced to move into this place? It's hard to find another explanation. Because the apartment is beautiful, yes, but not something I'd normally have been attracted to. I open my computer and go to the security page app for the building. I can watch the lobby and hallway feeds, a feature I've never checked out before, but it'll give me some warning for when Dan arrives. Why do I need a warning, though? Dan's not the enemy. I'm the one who brought danger into the house, and yet I feel a simmering anger at him. Part of what made us vulnerable was his family. If Penny had left the instructions she'd said she was going to, we wouldn't be in this mess. Or if Catherine hadn't been such a grasping bitch. Either one, and the dominoes would still be standing. I know these thoughts are unfair, even as they bloom in my mind, but I can't help them. But that isn't true, my questioning brain shoots back. They have other ways to trap me. The file, the compromising photos with Mark, things I probably don't even know about yet. What part of my life don't they have control over? This apartment is the cherry on the sundae. But it must have a purpose. Why do they want us here? What's the point? To contain. To control. To watch. Feeling sick, I click through the security footage menus, looking for an archive. It's there. Months worth of video coverage of the front door and the lobby. I'm surprised they keep this much footage, but that's a choice I don't have time to investigate. I start with the oldest entries and work through them methodically. I get to the day Dan and I visited with a real estate agent. I study our faces on the surprisingly clear images. I seem happy. Dan looks wary. I should have noticed, but I didn't. I'm a terrible wife, selfish and self-absorbed. I have a million apologies to make to him, and I don't know where to start. I move to the next day, and then the next. I find it on the third. Gary coming into the lobby. His face is shrouded, but I recognize his posture. He's less circumspect when he gets to my front door. He enters without any hesitation. Did he have the key? Of course. Connie gave it to him. What did you do in my apartment, Gary? I think back to the instructions I received from Karma the other night. All those precise commands. The cameras that must be in Athena's apartment. Athena's, which also belongs to Connie. I don't know how to identify hidden cameras, so I Google it. What shapes to look for? The usual places to hide them. Armed with some knowledge, I'm about to start searching when I stop. Cameras mean someone could be watching. Is that happening right now? Does Panthera have enough manpower to watch every member? Or do they keep their resources for people they're worried about, like me? I can't take the risk. I have to assume Karma is watching me. I didn't send her the draft affidavit today when she asked, telling her that it wasn't complete yet and that I was worried about sending it electronically, given the bombshells it contained. I assured her that Athena was cooperating, that I'd file a motion to introduce the evidence shortly. She'd seemed mollified, but who knew? How can I tell, though, if I can't find the cameras? Maybe there's a simpler way to determine how closely they're monitoring me. I grab my purse and go into my bedroom. I root around for the Panthera pin I'd stashed there this morning and take it out. It looks innocent, but how can it be? I try to imagine where a camera might be in this room. Surely there isn't one in the closet. I take the pin inside it, cupped in my hand, and think about how it had pricked me that night in July. My blood was wiped away on a cloth. Was that on purpose, too? Had they kept it to have my DNA? How paranoid do I need to be? I examine the pin. Based on my research, it isn't large enough to house a camera, but a microphone? A tracker? I don't know enough, and the only way I can find out, smashing it open, will reveal what I'm up to. The pin isn't going to help me figure out what I need to know, so I find a shoebox and place it inside. If I'm asked about it, I'll say I lost it somewhere, and how can they prove otherwise without letting me know that they know where it is? My watch buzzes with a Panthera message. Shit, maybe there are cameras in the closet? I try to quell my breathing and pick up my phone. It's Karma. Why did you leave the office early? How do you know that? I called your office. Answer the question. I'm tired. I need a break. It's been a lot. You can have a break after the trial. What if I can't make it till then? There's a pause from Karma, and then a series of photos pop into the thread. Me in the lobby of Athena's building. Me entering her apartment. Me standing over Jack's body. Me in the basement fishing the gun out of the dumpster, only it looks like I might be putting it there. My mind leaps forward, a moment of insight. Karma and Michelle had a deliberate plan when they put Jack in Athena's path. They were behind the attack. Maybe they didn't intend for Jack to die, but they clearly meant to compromise Athena. This is the test, she'd said. But what's being tested? Her loyalty? Mine? How far we'd go to protect ourselves? How far we'd go to protect them? That has to be it. That's what Karma meant, though I haven't fully gotten it until now. Back at the pin ceremony, she'd said that there was a way through the test if we acted together and didn't question why it was happening. Blind obedience is what she wanted, and that's what they wanted to test. What they could get us to do if we simply said yes, no matter the consequences. What do I do? Just submit? No. It's gone too far for that. I've compromised too much of myself already. I need to find a way out of this. I need time. Time to formulate a plan without my every move being watched. You don't need to threaten me, I write. I'm doing what you want. It does not feel that way. Regardless, this is your last warning. Do you understand? Yes. Athena will be testifying. See to it that it is done. Yes. There is only one way out of this, Karma writes. Follow our instructions. I understand, I write, keeping my face as still as I can, knowing for certain that they're watching me. I check the time. It's coming up on 5. Dan will be leaving work soon. I need to head him off, meet him somewhere else. I need to get in touch with him in a way that isn't being monitored. I have to assume that everything I own, my phone, my computer, all of it, is compromised. And while apps like Signal are supposed to be secure, I have no assurance that Connie hasn't found a way to penetrate that system. I will myself to think while I do something innocuous and get a Diet Coke from the fridge. How can I reach out to Dan without them knowing? There must be a way. Oh, the burner phone Dan got me when I went to the retreat. It's still in my suitcase. I take a drink of my Coke, walk calmly to the hall closet, and go right into it, closing the door behind me. I don't turn on the light. Instead, I feel around in the dark until I find the phone in my suitcase. When I turn it on, it still has a charge, enough juice to send Dan a text. Meet me at our old place. Why? And why are you texting me from this phone? I can't explain now. Just do it, okay? And maybe leave your phone at the office.
What?
I'll explain everything when I see you, I promise. Dan doesn't write back immediately. I can imagine him sitting at his desk, wondering if his wife has gone mad. And she has. She has. And she needs his help. Please, I write.
Okay, I'll be there in an hour. Are you okay?
No, but we will be. I turn off the phone and push it deep into my pocket. I grab a coat and leave the closet, looking puzzled, then examine the door and the handle to give the impression that it closed behind me without me wanting it to. I shake my head, then shrug and walk away. Will whoever's watching buy this act? I'll find out soon enough. I pack a backpack as surreptitiously as I can, then send a dummy text to Dan saying we should stay in a hotel for the weekend to spend some quality time together. Then I go online and book a room at the Benjamin. I try to think about all the things you're supposed to do to stay off the grid. I have a couple of $100 in cash, which I'd taken out to pay the cleaner. My phone and laptop are out, but I have an old laptop that I haven't used in years, which is in my bedroom closet. I put that in the backpack along with a change of clothes. In the bathroom, I write down the numbers for the people I need in a small notebook, praying that they didn't put cameras in there too, then put my phone down on the counter in the kitchen. Will they believe I've forgotten it? Does it matter if they can't find me? Or maybe there's another way. I pick up the phone and text Karma. I'm going to book into a hotel for a few days.
Why?
I need a quiet place to work so I can get this trial ready. Somewhere I can totally immerse myself and get some rest. It's too hard for me to do that here. I forward her my booking at the Benjamin, hoping it's enough to convince her.
You're strong, Nicole.
Thank you.
We wouldn't have picked you if you were not up to the task. Trust us.
Good Lord, is Karma so deluded that she thinks I could ever do that again?
I do. You may go. I expect Athena's proposed testimony to be filed on Monday.
It will be. I put down the phone and breathe a sigh of relief. I pull out a suitcase and pack, hoping no one notices that I'm putting things for Dan in as well. I wheel the bag out of our room with my backpack on my shoulder. I leave my phone in the kitchen. The burner phone is in my pocket. Outside in the cold, blustery day, I feel free for the first time in weeks. It's a fleeting sensation, but it's something to build on. I never should have given my freedom away. Chapter 30. The Old Apartment. Now, October.
What the hell is going on?
Dan asks as he barrels into Penny's apartment. I arrived 20 minutes ago, almost begging Catherine to let me up. She was her usual frosty self at first, but when she saw the state I was in, sweatpants, an old sweater of Dan's, skin pale from stress and lack of sleep, she let me in and poured me a large glass of wine.
Can you get him something to drink, Catherine?
Sure, she says and goes into the kitchen. We're in the dining room, which is not so different than how it was when we lived here. I wonder what happened to all her grand plans to redecorate. Dan sits across from me at the dining room table. He looks washed out and tired. He's still in his suit from work, though he's taken off his tie and opened the top button on his dress shirt. I reach across the table to hold his hand. He takes it, squeezing it tight.
Why the weird texts? Why are you using the burner phone? Why are we here?
I try to smile in a reassuring way. All excellent questions.
Does this have something to do with where you were last night?
Yes. Dan casts his eyes down.
Not work.
No.
Was it that guy? Mark?
I squeeze his hand harder. No. I take a ragged breath. Wait, did someone say something to you?
Catherine comes back with a bottle of red wine and three glasses.
Should I leave you two alone?
Dan nods, but I interject.
No, Catherine, I think this involves you too.
It does?
Dan says.
Why don't you sit? I say to Catherine.
She's wearing a pair of leggings and a lightweight sweater, and her hair is up in a ballet bun. Without makeup and the waspy clothes she wears when she's with her mother, she looks much more human.
Catherine takes a seat at the table and pours out the wine.
Dan gives me a look.
I know what it means. What's gotten into you?
He doesn't know the quarter of it.
I wanted to ask you, Catherine, why you decided to move to New York.
I told you, I got a job offer from Linnaeus.
Linnaeus. Something about that name is niggling at me.
What do they do?
Part of their business is mass production of generic drugs, like the family company, only on a much larger scale. But they're also doing some very interesting research on a new protein that's made by immune cells. If the research pans out, it could be a game changer for allergy sufferers and the immunocompromised.
Do you know who owns them?
It's owned by a holding company.
Give me a second.
I leave briefly to grab my backpack and take out the old laptop stashed inside. I plug it in and boot it up, and when I'm connected to the internet, I do a quick search on Linnaeus. Carl Linnaeus was one of the first scientists to describe lions in a scientific way in 1758. Linnaeus is owned by a numbered company that's owned by another company that's owned by Felidae. Connie's company.
Why does it matter?
Dan asks. Connie Chu owns that company.
Oh, shit.
Who's Connie Chu?
Catherine says, her eyes darting back and forth between us.
I'll explain in a minute. Did you apply for this job?
No, I was recruited.
Why did you take it? I thought you were happy in Cincinnati.
I've been running our company profitably for 5 years, but the bank doesn't want to scale up or step back, and no one takes me seriously there. Because my name's on the building, they assume I didn't deserve the job. But I have an MBA from Wharton. I'm good at what I do. I've been looking for something else for a while, and when this came along, it seemed like the perfect fit.
But what's this all about? What does Connie have to do with it?
In June, I got approached to join a women's organization. It was billed as a networking opportunity, and they asked me at the right time. I'd received some bad news at work, and I needed a boost. So I went to their retreat in Colorado in July, and that's where I met Connie Chu.
That's odd.
Not odd, I say. Deliberate. They recruited me because they wanted me to be their lawyer in a piece of litigation that's very important to them.
Sullivan?
Dan says.
That's right.
But why?
Dan asks.
I mean, that guy is a creep, but why is it so important to them?
Sullivan tried to take over Good Karma 5 years ago.
Good Karma, Catherine says. The wellness company?
It's much more than that. They have their hand in a lot of pies, the health and beauty products being the most public. Karma Rosen is one of the founders of the group.
What is this group? Catherine says. It sounds like something I should join.
That's what I thought. But I was wrong.
I'm confused. What's going on exactly?
You're not the only one,
Dan says. I take a deep drink of wine, but it's not helping. I don't even know where to start. But I need your help, both of you. I'm in trouble. It sounds so melodramatic saying this in the safety of Penny's apartment. In an odd way, I feel more at peace than I have in months in these familiar surroundings. Then I flash back to the events in Athena's apartment, the dead body on the floor, the things I did at Karma's command, and I know I have to come clean to Dan and to Catherine, too.
that what I just said is more than a fact. It's a plea. Will you help me? Catherine and Dan exchange a look, an image of complicity that I've seen in family photographs, but never in person.
We will, Dan says. But first, we need to know everything.
Many hours later, Dan and I climb into the guest bed. This is the room that smells the most like when Penny lived here. The lavender she used to keep it fresh has seeped into the wood, the floors, the air. It used to bother me, but tonight I'm happy for the familiar embrace.
In the morning, Dan says, we go to the police.
I've told them everything, all the things that happened at the retreat, what's taken place since I got back, the warning signs I ignored, the slow march to the other night. Dan and Catherine listened and asked questions, and Dan eventually started taking notes on a legal pad. For a part of the evening, it felt like old times, or that one old time when our firms were co-defendants on a case and we got to work together. Dan is smart and good at this, as good as me, and smarter probably because he's found a way to be happy with less success. Somehow along the way, I forgot about that, that a lot of his initial appeal was his intelligence. But this, I can't agree with this. We can't do that.
We can't cover up a murder.
I shiver under the covers. It wasn't murder.
She shot him.
Yes, but if it happened, it was self-defense.
If?
I know it sounds crazy, but...
What?
I prop myself up on a pillow. Something has been haunting me since that night. How she seemed so sure that this was a test. The test, she said. If that's true, then it was a circumstance that was created by PL to see how we'd handle it. So if it's manufactured, is that what really happened? If even Athena and Jack's meeting was arranged by them, and it had to be, given that he isn't who he said he was, and oh, I flash back to the scene in Athena's bedroom, Jack on his back, his arms splayed out, the small hole in his chest. There wasn't enough blood.
What?
When we turned him over to roll him into the tarp, if he was shot through the chest, there would have been buckets of it, and Gary didn't do anything to clean up in there. If he was really dead, if they were trying to cover it up, then there would have had to have been a whole cleaning crew to get his DNA out of there.
What are you saying? That they staged a fake death? All because of a court case?
That can't be the only reason. There must be something else. But yes, I think Jack is alive.
How do we prove that?
I'm not sure. But something else is bugging me. Something I saw today when I was researching Jack. Can I have your iPad? I want to check something.
You're not making any sense.
I know. It will in a second, I think. He hands me his iPad, and I navigate to Instagram and look up Jack's page again. It's full of his daily posts. Workouts, food, random street views. Dan watches what I'm doing over my shoulder.
Is that the guy? Jack?
Do you recognize him?
No, but hold on a sec.
He taps on Jack's most recent photo, one of him at a gym.
That's the Flex gym near my old office.
Are you sure?
I recognize that setup. I used it for years, and the poster on the wall behind him.
I study the photo, searching for clues, trying to figure out what it was that drew me back to this page. Something I saw and ignored, or something I missed? He'd written Fit Life and the hashtags hashtag workout, hashtag fit, hashtag daily. The post had 6 likes, and... OMG, look at this! I point to the bottom of the post. He posted this today!
Wait, what?
I tap the screen where it says the photograph was posted 10 hours ago. I hadn't noticed it this morning. The time tag is so small, it must have only registered in my subconscious. He's alive.
Come on. Maybe he's scheduled the post before he died? Can you do that on Instagram? Or it's a glitch?
I don't think you can schedule posts on Instagram without using some kind of third-party app, which I guess is possible, but why would he do that? And his posting today fits with the facts. The test. The fact that Gary barely cleaned up the apartment. All he did was get Jack out of there. It wasn't enough. Not if a real crime had occurred.
Okay, say it's true. Why would Jack go along with it? Who'd let themselves be caught up in that?
He's an actor, isn't he? I guess he was paid.
You'd have to pay me a lot of money to do something like that.
Yes, but they have a lot of money. Dan runs his hands through his hair.
If you're right, then it hasn't really worked, has it? Not if it's so easy to establish that he's alive. I mean, why let him post today? Doesn't that undo everything they did?
I bet they didn't expect anyone to go looking. The point of the test is to put you in a situation where they control your behavior, to see if you'll do what they want. They wanted to show Athena that they could control every aspect of her life, so she'd do what they needed her to do. Once they'd flexed that muscle, Athena wasn't going to go looking into whether he was truly dead. They didn't think I would either.
They took a big risk.
Did they, though? They've been two steps ahead of me this whole time. More. Everything that's happened to me since the management committee reduced my points has been manipulated by them. Hell, they're probably even behind that, too.
How?
A lot of research and planning and a lot of money. But you see that we can't go to the police, right? Not until we know more.
But how are we going to do anything about this?
I'm not sure. But I think I know where to start. I tap the iPad. The gym. Let's go there tomorrow and see what we can find out. Dan frowns.
We're not TV detectives. These people are dangerous.
Then we'll have to be very, very careful. Chapter 31. Teamwork. Now, October. In the morning, we decide that it makes more sense for Dan to go to the gym alone. If someone is watching, then they'll be expecting me, not Dan. He dresses in sweats and an old ball cap and leaves me with Catherine in the kitchen. I fill her in on the fact that we think that Jack is alive, and the concern that's creasing her face relaxes, then reforms. This all sounds nuts. I wrap my hands around my coffee mug. I know. I feel like I'm going crazy.
Are you?
I've thought of that, but no, I don't think so. Catherine finishes the omelet she's making and puts it on a plate for me. Thank you. No problem. I like cooking. How's the job going? Catherine gives me a wry look. You mean the one I got only as a way to fuck with you?
You're angry.
No, I just... Catherine sits down at the table, cradling her own mug. I thought I'd gotten that on my own, that I earned it.
I'm sorry.
Are you?
I didn't want any of this to happen.
You're always so hostile, though. To me? My mom?
No, I stopped myself from saying that they were always so hostile to me, ever since Dan introduced me to them 6 months after we started dating.
Catherine picks up her fork. You think we were the unfriendly ones?
Weren't you?
I'm not saying my family is all warm and fuzzy. Dan is the nicest of all of us. But it was like you were expecting us to hate you. You had this armor up, and at the same time, you kind of looked down on us. I want to fight her on that one, but maybe she's right. We could both be in the wrong. It takes two to fight. I'm sorry I made you feel that way.
It's okay.
Not really. And I am truly sorry that you're caught up in this mess. I appreciate you taking us in. It means a lot.
Your family?
My throat tightens. This is the nicest thing she's ever said to me, but I've never said anything nice to her either. This conversation is like a mirror being held up to reflect my worst qualities. Thank you. Everything okay with you and Dan? How would you react if your spouse did what I did? Hard to know when I don't have a spouse. I watch Catherine while she slowly eats her eggs. She seems matter-of-fact about this, not hurt or upset. And good for her. Too many of us get our worth from our relationship status. Well, I've learned one thing about dating, I say. What's that? Stay off the internet. Catherine starts to laugh, and I join her. It has a hysterical tinge to it, but it's one of those laughs that grabs you by the belly and doesn't let go. Soon, tears are running down my face, and hers too. I clench my stomach, getting control of myself. We shouldn't be laughing. No, someone might be dead. She wipes the tears from her cheeks. But probably not, right? You said. Probably not. But the rest of it is almost as bad. But you're trying to fix it. That's what you do. I do? I don't know you that well, but yeah, that's always been my impression. You see a problem and try to solve it. I admire that about you. Thank you. So what's the fix here? I lift my shoulders. I don't know. I'm more in the mode of trying to fully figure out what's going on first. I don't have the full picture. What's the next step then? Let's see what Dan comes back with. Can I help? It's nice of you to offer, but I think it's better if you stay out of it for now. You don't want to be taken down with me if it doesn't work. You know, they have this saying at Linnaeus. It was repeated a million times in our new hire training. You can only fix what you know is a problem. I pick up my fork and dig into the omelet. Oh, I know I have a problem. Well, yeah, but it feels like you're just reacting, not trying to get ahead of it. You're right, I have been doing that. It's hard to get ahead of something when I don't even know how big it is. When do you think they started planning this? It must go back a while. When did Linnaeus first approach you? March or April. They wanted to get me here in New York, right? So you'd have to move out of the apartment? Yes, but that raises so many questions. I raise my fingers to count them off. How did they know that would happen? How did they even know there was an apartment to fight over? How did they know about Penny's will? Catherine nods. How did they know Penny was sick at all? Penny was diagnosed as terminal in March. That's when she told us she spoke to her lawyer to make sure everything was in order. That's why we assumed that there were instructions to sell us the apartment when Ms. Coates told us about the will. I sit back in my chair. Ms. Coates. Her lawyer. She must be in Panthera. You think she changed the will? She wouldn't have needed to do that, but she could have just ignored Penny's instructions about the apartment if they weren't in the will. Why do that? To make me vulnerable. The place we're living in is owned by Connie. I'm pretty sure it's bugged. Catherine shudders. That's creepy. Which is why we're staying here. Thank you for that. I sit back in my chair. Getting us out of Penny's was a two-step process, though. Who recruited you? The executive VP of Linnaeus, a woman named Carrie Miller. I pull the computer toward me and Google her. She's in her mid-40s and has an impressive resume. On instinct, I check the images tab. I flip through a couple of photos until I find it. I click on the image and increase its size. Carrie's wearing a PL pin. Was it your idea to take over the apartment when you moved here? I ask. It's okay. I know you resented us being in here, but what made you ask to take it over? She thinks about it. Carrie might have suggested it. And that didn't raise a red flag? It happened organically. She came to Cincinnati for the final interview, and We spent the day together. I showed her around the factory, and then we went out to dinner. She was engaging and nice and easy to talk to.
And there was wine?
So much wine. I don't normally drink in work situations, but she told me I already had the job. She made it into a celebration.
I get it.
At some point, we were discussing where I'd live in New York, what neighborhoods to consider, and I told her about Penny's apartment, how I'd always wanted to live there, but that my brother did instead, and Penny had always favored him.
She casts her eyes down.
Penny did favor Dan, I say lightly. She admitted it to me. That must have been hard. Except it's Dan. I'd favor him too.
She twists her mouth.
Anyway, I told her Penny was dying and that maybe you guys were going to buy the apartment. I don't even remember everything I said, but the next morning when I woke up, I thought, why can't I have the apartment? So I asked Mom about the will. You know the rest.
Penny's diagnosis, the job offer to Catherine, the drunken thought planted to take the apartment for herself. It had all worked out exactly the way they wanted. You almost have to admire the precision of it.
It's scary to think about, Catherine says, how easily I fell for it.
I did too.
They took some risks, though. They couldn't know when Penny was going to die or that I'd take the apartment.
I'm sure they had a backup plan.
All this for a lawsuit?
For revenge, I think. Karma wants to punish Sullivan.
Even if you win the lawsuit, though, that's only money. He might be out at Sullivan, but he still has Nexia, right? What are they accomplishing?
You're right. I stare at my plate. The eggs have gone cold and are unappealing.
And then I have one of those moments, like looking at a meaningless pattern of dots, and an image emerges. The connections all make sense to me now. I know why I was brought into this, who I am on the chessboard, and the others too.
Karma doesn't just want to expose Sullivan. She wants to take something from him just like he'd tried to take something from her. She doesn't just want him out at Sullivan. She wants Nexia. Later, I'm at my office putting together the material I'll need for the meeting I've arranged with Athena and Samantha. I took a risk coming to the office, but it's a graveyard on Saturdays, and so far, I haven't seen a soul. As I'm downloading files onto the laptop, Dan calls.
You were right.
He sounds excited and out of breath. My heart accelerates. I knew it, but to hear it confirmed still takes me by surprise.
Jack was there?
Yesterday, and again this morning. The desk clerk confirmed he checked in using his membership.
How did you get that information?
Dan chuckles.
You think I'm not charming enough to get someone to give up their secrets?
No, I know you are. I'm touched that you're using that charm for me.
You're welcome.
Did you get the evidence that he was there?
I got a screenshot of the login, and she even gave me a clip of camera footage from the part of the gym where he works out.
Wow, you're more persuasive than I imagined.
I think he's been rude to her in the past, so she was more than happy to help me out when I told her he'd been harassing my wife.
Revenge. It's our theme.
Pretty much.
I sit on the edge of my desk. I figured some stuff out this morning. I've arranged an off-site meeting later today to try to put all of this together. I'll text you the address, if you still want to help.
Stop asking that, okay? You're my wife. We're in this together.
Thank you for not saying it.
What?
I told you so.
He chuckles.
It's fine.
You were thinking it, though.
I'll see you later.
I end the call, then straighten up and check my reflection in my screen. There I am, same as ever. I don't know what I expected to see, but it's reassuring in a way. I can still get back to the person I was before all of this started, if I play my cards right.
I wrote the memo, Julia says behind me.
I wheel around.
Oh, great.
Can you email it to me?
She nods, but doesn't say anything. She's wearing yoga pants and a loose sweatshirt and looks about 20 years old. Vulnerable.
What is it, Julia?
You're in that group, right? My mom's group? I don't see any point in denying it.
Yes, why?
Panthera isn't good. It does bad things.
Such as?
She meets my eyes quickly, then looks away. My mother, Karma, they're not nice people.
In what way? I asked carefully.
No one ever believes me when I tell them that. But you know how my mother left her career behind and went to Africa? How she had this great spiritual awakening? Well, that was me she was leaving behind, too. I was 10.
I'm sorry. That's terrible.
It was terrible. That's what I'm trying to tell you. That's who you're involved with. Someone who'd leave her daughter behind and ask you to be happy for her because it's what she needed to do for her. It didn't matter what happened to me. And Karma, she encouraged all of it.
I don't have any trouble believing that about Karma, but Michelle seems softer, less threatening.
Then again, I wasn't abandoned by her, and she's in this with Karma, however soft she may appear.
Why are you telling me this?
Because I can tell you're in trouble. Everyone around them is always in trouble.
I'm okay.
You're not. People lie to me like I can't tell. But I can. I always could.
I wonder if it's true. It could be useful to have her around for the next few days. But do I risk it? How can I trust someone who was planted on my team to spy on me?
Have you been telling your mom or Karma what you've been working on here?
No, I told you.
Can I trust you?
You're asking me?
I am, Julia. I am asking you, because you're right. Your mother and Karma are up to no good, and I could use your help. But I need to know if I can rely on you. I need you to be on my side, not theirs.
I can do that, she says. But what about you?
What about me?
You're in Panthera, not me.
I was only trying to get a leg up in my career. I didn't know. I thought the group was about helping each other.
She juts out her chin.
People should get things because they deserve it, not because of some secret organization.
I get it. But one thing your mother and Karma have brought into focus is that a lot of people have a leg up in this world. If you use connections to get ahead, then you're just doing what everyone is doing. And maybe that seems cynical, but I do still believe in the ostensible purpose of their organization.
Which is?
To be like men in the world. Not to question how or why we get things, because they never do.
We should be better than them, not adopt their methods.
I shake my head. So you'll be resigning from your position? Give back your Harvard degree, only take what you have 100% earned for yourself? How would you even measure that?
I don't know, but...
But what? Julia clamps her jaw shut, and I instantly regret my tone. I'm sorry, Julia, I didn't mean to snap at you. I'm under a lot of stress.
Okay.
I want things to be fair, too. I do, but it might not look like the kind of justice you learned about in law school. Is that okay with you?
Will people get hurt?
They might. Only bad people, hopefully, but I can't guarantee that.
I understand.
So do you want to help? It's entirely your decision.
Is my mother going to be hurt?
If this works, yes, she might.
She considers it, but only for a moment. I'm in.
Chapter 32. I love it when a plan comes together. Now, October.
Later that afternoon, Dan, Athena, Samantha, Julia, and I are holed up in Athena's district office. The room we're sitting in is charmless and windowless. It's their secure room and is swept regularly for listening devices, Athena tells me. There's a wall of whiteboards streaked with old strategic plans, and the stench of stale food clings to the air. We've ordered in sandwiches and soft drinks, and now we're ready to get down to business. I haven't logged on to the Wi-Fi. Our operating principle is that everything we use is bugged or otherwise tracked, but Athena has an air-gapped laptop that her head of voting outreach uses to protect their mailing lists. It's not connected to the internet, and it's supposedly impenetrable. Julia's working with it. Athena, I say, please tell us from the beginning what happened that night. Athena nods in a determined way. We went to dinner like we have plenty of times before, but he was acting different. Different how? On our other dates, he'd been a bit standoffish. Fun, flirty, but it felt like he was going through the motions. Why did you go on more than one date with him then? Samantha asks. She came directly from a bar class, and she looks like a dancer, her hair in a tight bun, her arms sinewy and strong. It's hard for me to meet nice men. He felt harmless, and it was good to have someone to have dinner with once in a while. What was different that night? I ask. He was much more aggressive. Not overtly, at first, but he had a different feel to him. It's hard to explain, but I thought it meant that he wanted to have sex. Which you hadn't before? No, but I wanted to. She smiled shyly. That had been a while, too. It's okay, Athena. Go on. We had dinner, and he suggested going back to my place, and I said yes. We came upstairs, and I poured us some wine. That's when things went sideways. How so? I think he put something in my drink. I felt woozy, but I'd only had one glass of wine at dinner, so that's the only thing that makes sense. I kick myself. What happened to those glasses of wine on the counter at Athena's the other night? I'm drawing a blank. Did you keep the glasses? No, I only realized the next morning when I was washing them out after you'd left. It was too late to keep a sample, but I'm sure. It's the only thing that explains, well, everything that happened after. It makes sense to me, too. She had seemed drugged that night. I'd attributed it to the shock, but drugs fit her behavior better. What did happen? I told him I wasn't feeling well, and when I stood, I was dizzy, so he said he'd help me upstairs. He'd backed off as soon as we got to my apartment, so I let him. She stares straight ahead. When we got to the bedroom, he grabbed me and tried to kiss me. I pushed him away. He grabbed me again. I told him to go. He said he would after he finished. I got myself away from him and to the nightstand where my gun was. I took it out. I told him to leave, to stay away from me. But he kept coming and coming. He wouldn't listen. I pulled the trigger and he dropped to the floor. There was blood. You saw. I was sure he was dead. Dan coughs at the other end of the table.
Did Karma or Michelle know you had a gun?
They knew I'd learned to shoot because of the threats that I get.
The ones you get? He asks. Or the ones you were getting? Had you been getting more threats in the last 6 months?
There was a series of particularly awful ones last fall. That's why I got my license in the first place. Why I learned to shoot and moved into that apartment. This guy was sort of stalking me, and he broke into my old place.
Did Karma suggest that you get a gun? I say. That you get trained to use it?
She did.
God, Dan says. How long have they been planning this?
A long time, I'll bet.
You had a file on me when we met, right, Athena? On the plane?
Athena looks guilty.
How did you know?
It was too much of a coincidence that you were seated next to me and you knew things about me, like my name when I hadn't told you what it was. And when we were on that hike together, you said something about the points committee, even though I hadn't told you about that. Did you have a file on each of us? Me, Samantha, and Heather?
Yes, they gave them to me and Connie.
Did they tell you what they were putting the pride together for?
Only that they were reshuffling things, expanding and including new members.
Clearly a lie, Dan says. Samantha and Athena were included because they were Sullivan's victims, Heather because of the takeover, and Nicole for the trial.
Where is Heather? Samantha asks. I haven't looped her in yet, I say.
Why not?
I wanted to keep the circle as small as possible for now. If they're monitoring us, I can justify this group because we're prepping for trial. But if I bring Heather in, they'll know we're up to something.
Why do you think they picked you? Julia asks.
I'm sure they had their eye on a couple of possibilities. They needed someone that they could put in a vulnerable position. My points were cut right before they approached me to join. I'm not sure how they manipulated that, but I trail off as another piece of the puzzle falls into place.
What?
Dan asks.
Radius.
What's that?
It's the dating site where Athena met Jack. But remember that first night we looked together, Athena? Thomas was on there.
Thomas was on a dating site? Dan says. Isn't he married?
He is, and he is the head of the points committee. If he didn't defend me in the meeting, it could explain why my points were lowered so much. And he is the one who made me feel so bad about myself right before I got the invitation to join the group.
They must be blackmailing him, Dan says. But how would they know he was on Radius?
Sandy must have told them. I turn to Athena and Samantha. His wife. She's a lawyer, too.
Sandy Phillips? Athena asks.
Yes.
She was in my first pride in Panthera.
I sink in my seat.
Jesus.
We sit in silence for a minute, absorbing this new information.
What happened next? Julia says eventually.
That night, Athena, with Jack. Athena rubs her hands up and down her arms.
I felt so sick and out of it. I sat there in disbelief for a few minutes, and then I called Karma and asked for help.
Why?
She's always saying to me in our check-ins that I should rely on her for whatever I need. Her suggestion stuck.
You told her what happened?
Yes. She said she'd take care of it. To go downstairs and leave the front door unlocked.
Athena places her hands flat on the table. And then to text me?
She said to text you and ask for help.
And the gun, did she tell you to put it down the garbage chute?
I did that on my own. After I opened the door, I realized it was in my hand, so I put it down there. And then I went to take a shower because I felt dirty.
Dan rattles his legal pad.
So, to summarize, Karma and Michelle arranged for you to meet Jack. I assume Connie helped them with the tech side of things, getting you and him to match on Radius.
Athena expels a deep breath. Connie's the one who told me about Radius.
I turn to Julia. Find out who owns Radius.
Good idea, she says, and makes a note.
Okay, I say. You meet Jack, you go on dates, they make sure that you have a gun in your home, and when the timing is right, they get you to pull the trigger.
But what about the blood? The shot? How is he alive?
Dan asks. He's an actor. I assume the blood was fake. Maybe he even took something to slow his heart rate down, to put him in a deep sleep so it would seem like he was dead. And the shot must have been a blank. At some point, they sent someone into your apartment to change out the bullets. Connie has a key. They probably used Gary to do it. Karma called him in like she did Wednesday night.
Athena shudders. That guy gives me the creeps.
Me too. I wonder what his role is. Why would he help Karma and Michelle like this?
I know, Julia says. I know why he would help them.
Why?
Gary is married to Karma.
Chapter 33. One man, one vote. Now, October.
Gary's Karma's husband? I say. Are you sure?
Completely, Julia says.
Flashcards of my interactions with Gary flick through my mind. His silence in the van as he drove us from the airport to the ranch. The way he took our phones from us at dinner. His cold manner in Athena's apartment the other night. How certain he'd seemed that Jack was dead. Jack wasn't the only actor involved in this plot. Why did they hide it? I ask.
Karma likes to project an Amazonian persona, Julia says, that she's solely in charge and doesn't need men. But she and Gary started good karma together. I guess they decided then that they'd keep him a secret. It made for better marketing.
Did you know this, Athena?
I'm as shocked as you are.
God, what else don't I know? How am I going to find out everything I need to in time? What about Connie? I ask. What's her role in all of this?
I've only met her a few times, Julia says, but she's been in the group since the beginning, I think. When my mom came back from Tanzania and she started working with Karma, that's when I met Connie.
Is she in on the plan with Michelle and Karma?
Athena bites her lip. She must be. The apartments, Radius, she's on the board of Sullivan. She has to know some of what's going on.
More than some of it, I think,
Dan says.
They couldn't do it without her.
You're right.
Why are you helping us, Julia? Dan asks. Going against your own family.
What they're doing is wrong. Manipulating the court system. Manipulating people.
You included?
Julia's cheeks are tinged with pink.
Yes, obviously.
They underestimated you.
People always do.
Their mistake.
Dan holds up the legal yellow pad he's been scratching at.
So we know what Samantha and Athena and Gary and Nicole are doing in this little play. This part of the plan was the backup in case you didn't want to go along, Athena, right? You told them you didn't want to testify when they first asked you to?
That's right.
Why did they need to go this far? Why didn't you just agree to do what they wanted?
Athena places her hands in her lap.
Because that would destroy everything I thought we were working for together.
How did they know about you and Sullivan?
The same way they found Samantha. They combed through personnel records searching for abrupt departures. Sullivan had a type and a pattern. When Karma first brought it up, it was like she already knew exactly what had happened.
Me too, Samantha says. When Connie approached me, she already knew also. Or it seemed like she did. She'd researched me, knew I'd gone to therapy, that the person I'd posted about in relation to hashtag me too was him.
She presented a guess as a fact, I say. It's a courtroom tactic. If you state something you believe firmly enough, you can often get a witness to accept it, because they're convinced you know the truth, even if you don't.
That makes sense, Athena says.
When did you first tell them that you wouldn't testify?
Last fall.
What about you, Samantha?
Dan asks.
When were you approached?
January.
And you agreed to testify?
I did. My role on District Attorney was finishing, and Connie got me into audition for Law and Order. Connie also made sure that the production company knew I was going to testify. They promised it wouldn't be an issue for them. They wanted an opportunity to stand behind a woman who was speaking out, and I was it.
So it was easy for you to say yes.
It was.
And if you hadn't, do you think they had something in store for you?
I'm sure some doors would have been shut. Nothing I'd ever be able to prove. You can never tell why you get a part and why you don't. It's maddening.
When did the lawsuit start?
Dan asks. I know the file by heart. Jennifer Naughton came forward 3 years ago, which prompted an internal investigation. She filed her lawsuit shortly after Sullivan's internal investigation concluded and Sullivan was ousted from the company.
And Connie would have known that because she's on the board,
Dan states. Yes, I'm sure she did.
And the board made the decision to fire him.
Absolutely. Firing the CEO is a board-level decision. Sullivan doesn't have a majority stake in the company, so he couldn't fend it off.
Do we know when Connie joined Sullivan's board?
Can't check that in here, I say, but I bet it's 4 years ago.
You think Connie got on that board on purpose, and she and Karma and Michelle got Naughton to come forward to give them an opportunity to get him fired?
I do. Karma asked me to join Panthera 4 years ago, Athena says, before the complaint about Sullivan.
But that's not when she brought up Sullivan?
No, that was more recent, but she must have known. That's why I was recruited.
Clearly. So Sullivan pisses off Karma 5 years ago. She starts to plot her revenge. She's heard that he might have a problem with women. It was 2017, the height of #MeToo.
She searches out victims with Connie's help, gathers you close, and they prompt the first complaint. He gets dismissed, with Connie likely pushing for that at the board level.
But the evidence isn't that strong, so he sues over it.
Pretty predictable for a guy like Sullivan.
Okay, so then he sues. But why does Karma care about the outcome of the lawsuit?
Karma hates Sullivan, Julia says. He tried to take her company away from her.
She wants to make sure he isn't reinstated?
Dan asks.
Is he even asking for that?
No, I say. Regardless of the outcome of the lawsuit, he's out at Sullivan. But he's still at Nexia.
Nexia? Samantha says, her voice quavering slightly.
Nexia is where she was assaulted.
What's Nexia?
Dan asks. His nanotech company. They're trying to revolutionize drug delivery systems. If it works, it's a game changer.
Why would they want that company?
There must be synergies with Good Karma, but mostly, I think they want to destroy him.
But what's the lawsuit have to do with taking over Nexia?
Athena asks. It's where Heather comes in. We have a short debate about whether Heather can be trusted. Connie is out of the question, but Heather doesn't seem like the sort who'd be easily cowed by Panthera. That's the wrong way to look at it, though. We all have vulnerabilities. Just because I don't know what Heather's is doesn't mean she doesn't have one. But I'm a litigator, and Heather is the expert in takeovers, and I need her to find a way to do what I want. We have to take a risk. So after some back and forth, Athena calls Heather and tells her that she needs her help ASAP to work on a mailing to constituents, the same cover story that she and Samantha are using to be in the office in case anyone is paying attention. I feel nervous, but I tell myself Panthera isn't big enough to be watching us 24/7. It's not the Soviet Union, one minder for each person. Besides, they think they're about to get what they want. Their guard should be down. Even if it isn't, I'm not sure they can stop us now. I meet Heather at the entrance, waiting inside the door. Some of the leaves are starting to fall from the trees, and they're tossing in the wind. Heather arrives in a blanket shawl, her cheeks rosy, curiosity in her face. I raise a finger to my lips and whisper, "Where's your pin?"
"Oh, that old thing? I never remember to wear it. Michelle's always scolding me."
I smile and hold out a box where I indicate she should put her cell phone. She raises her eyebrows and I mouth that I'll explain in a minute. She puts her phone in with a shrug and I turn it off, then leave the box in Athena's office. Heather follows me into the conference room and stops short in the doorway, taking in the participants.
What's going on here?
You know my husband, Dan, and this is Julia. She works at my firm and is Michelle's daughter.
Heather laughs. That's why you looked familiar.
No one thinks we look alike. I look like my dad.
I meant, I think I saw your picture in her office once.
Julia doesn't say anything, and I take my seat at the table.
I'll explain everything in a moment, but if you don't mind, can I ask you some questions first?
I indicate an empty seat, and she sits and unwinds her shawl. I offer her some sandwiches, which she declines, but she takes a Diet Coke, clicking open the can with a sharp fizz.
All right, go ahead.
What was the first Panthera event that you attended?
July of last year. They have one every July, I think. Right, Athena?
That's right.
And you were recruited by Connie?
Yes. Heather takes a sip of her Diet Coke.
We started talking at a cocktail party, one of those mixer things, and then we had lunch. Soon afterwards, the invitation from Michelle and Karma arrived in my email. I ignored it for a couple of weeks, but then Connie contacted me and convinced me to join.
What happened at that first retreat? Why did you really leave?
Like I told you, I had to leave for a work thing.
When did you leave?
Heather sits back in her seat. The second day. So I went through the opening gathering or whatever and a few activities, and then the call came and I left.
And you left to work on a deal?
Yes.
A takeover attempt, I guess.
Yes.
I leave her answer there for a moment. Who was there with you?
Connie and three other women I've never seen again because I didn't join their pride. Karma, Michelle, and Gary.
And then you got invited again?
Yeah, in the spring. What's all this about?
The takeover.
What takeover?
Of Nexia. Athena stirs in her seat, then reaches for a can of Coke, nearly knocking it over. Heather sits upright.
How do you know about that?
It's the only thing that makes sense.
Makes sense of what?
I let out a sigh. I'm so tired. I don't have the energy to explain it all again to Heather.
Can we trust you?
I ask.
Trust me to do what?
Not to tell Michelle, Karma, and Connie.
Why would I tell them anything?
I stand and grab a Coke out of the mini-fridge in the corner and take a long sip, hoping the caffeine and sugar will give me the energy I need.
This is all a plot, I say. A long con, PL, our involvement in it.
I sit back down and explain to her as succinctly as I can what's been going on. Sullivan's original attempt to take over Good Karma, how Karma and Michelle decided to get revenge, their search for leverage over him, which led them to Athena, putting Connie in place on the Sullivan board, waiting for Sullivan to screw up, how they got him fired from Sullivan, how, when he sued, they decided to take it up a notch, the way they recruited Heather, me, and Samantha, and put us together with Athena and Connie. The leverage they built over me and Athena. That terrible night with Jack.
So that's the plan. And the final step is Nexia. They need to make sure that Sullivan loses his lawsuit, and not just loses, but loses badly enough that it will affect both his standing with the board and Nexia's stock price.
How do they do that? Heather asks. By getting more witnesses to testify against him. One woman was enough to get him removed from Sullivan, but not to take him down. But when you add Samantha and Athena into the mix, women who are powerful and known, then it starts a wave.
His own personal hashtag me too.
Yes.
And that brings us to me, Heather says.
They needed someone who could spearhead the takeover once the stock price plunges after their testimony comes out at trial. You've been buying Nexia stock, right?
Yes. Have you been shorting it, so you can get it cheaply when bad news hits?
That's part of the takeover strategy, Heather says slowly.
Is that public information?
Heather glances at Athena, then away.
The aggregate short position is easy to look up. That's why you need to do something like that over time, so it doesn't set off any alarm bells. Takeovers are delicate. You don't want to raise any suspicions until you're ready.
Remind me how many shares you need to own to do a takeover, I say. I slept through corporate law.
You can bid without owning a single share, but then the other shareholders can turn it down. If you have a large block of shares or a large block of shares that you know will vote with you, then you're in the best position to take over the company.
So you can just buy up a company's shares and then take it over? Samantha asks.
It's not that simple. There are lots of rules, but to simplify, you can buy up to 5% of a company anonymously. Then you have to disclose.
What about using proxies? I ask. If this plan has been in the works for a long time, then there'd be enough time to get allies to buy shares or get a seat on the board like Connie did with Sullivan.
Good point, Heather says. That could work.
Is that what your client is doing?
Some of it, yes.
Who is your client?
You know I can't tell you that. I've already told you too much.
It must be Karma and Michelle. I put up a hand. Don't worry, you don't have to confirm it. Even if you're not dealing with them directly, they're involved. And Connie, it's the only thing that makes sense.
I agree, Dan says. And we should stop it.
Stop what? Athena says.
The takeover.
Why? Samantha says. Who cares what happens to Sullivan or his companies?
Karma does, I say. And if we're going to get her and Michelle out of our lives, if we're going to be free of them, we need to stop their plan.
You want that, right?
I look at Athena, then Samantha, then Heather. Each of them is troubled, scared. It's how I feel too, but I can't spend the rest of my life like this. I don't believe Karma. She's not going to let me go when this is over. There will always be something else I have to do for them, some new demand.
What are you suggesting? Athena asks.
If you don't testify, I say, then the plan can't work. The existing evidence alone is not enough to bring down Sullivan.
But then they'll release all the stuff they have on us, Athena says. We have to testify.
No, I don't think so. I think there's a way that we can get out of this, maybe even turn the tables on Karma and Michelle.
Samantha draws in a deep breath.
Do you think that's wise?
It has to be better than letting them slowly take over every aspect of our lives. We're all their prisoners. Somehow, we've ended up in... I make eye contact with Dan. We've ended up in the corporate equivalent of a cult, and they're not going to let us leave quietly. Even if we go along with their plan and it works, it won't be the end. So that gives us two options. We stay, or we blow it up. And I don't want to stay.
Explosions can be messy, Dan says gently.
That's why we have to be out of the way when it goes off.